Hello and welcome back to the Real Arsenal Deal podcast. This is Rav, your host. Wherever you are in the world, welcome and thank you for tuning in. I'm recording this Friday morning, Melbourne time in Australia, so I thought I'd just hop back on a couple of days since my last recording. There isn't anything major, there's nothing official or confirmed, but just a few talking points bubbling away in the Arsenal world, so I thought I'd pop back on and just share a few thoughts. And today's recording, I'll cover some topics like Carlos Cuesta's appointment to his departing Arsenal to become a senior Serie A manager, which is like phenomenal at his age, and the growing doubts now around Thomas Partey renewing his contract with Arsenal. So I'll talk about that, of course. And then again, there was the big release just a few minutes after I published my recording 2 days ago. There was the big release of the fixtures announced, and there's certainly a lot to talk about there. So let's get straight into it. I'll start with Carlos Cuesta. There was a beautiful farewell message he posted. You can really just see it's quite amazing for me to watch from the outside looking in. You can see that there's such a fabric around Arsenal at the moment. Just the characteristics, the caliber of people involved, it really does mean something to them. There's a very special dynamic. And look, I can understand some cynicism, like what does it actually mean if we're not actually winning anything and we're not actually lifting trophies? And look, I can understand that mentality to an extent. However, I also don't forget where Arsenal have come from. Just 6, 7, 8 years ago, I mean, I don't want to go off on a too big of a tangent here because you probably know what I'm referring to. It was a very fractured time at Arsenal with Arsene Wenger departing. We had a lot of executive change as well. Gazidis, he left to go to Milan. We had some massive ownership changes as well. There was all sorts of rumblings behind the scenes at board level. Remember the Usmanov days? Right, looking to buy out the Kroenkes and vice versa, that they were standing firm, they're not going to sell, and it was just a very fractured time. And then at executive level at Arsenal, how many came and went in a short period of time? There was Raul Sanlehi, who you know, he oversaw the Nicolas Pepe transaction, and you see the ramifications of that, not just for his job, but for Arsenal in the years afterwards in the transfer market, how restricted our spending was so soon after. Smashing our record twice within 6 months for Lacazette and Aubameyang. So the point I'm making with all this is that I'm well aware of where Arsenal came from. A very disjointed, I wouldn't say we were unified at all. I think there was just, we were almost operating within silos, people looking after themselves to various extents and various levels. And of course, I haven't even mentioned yet that Emery was the wrong appointment. Excellent manager, yes, and I wish him all the best, except against Arsenal, of course. He seems to come back to haunt us repeatedly. But that was the wrong decision. Then we finally had the ownership changes confirmed. And then since the club has been under the 100% ownership and oversight of KSC, you have to say things have been much, much more unified. There has been a progression over the years since. Now that brings me back to the point I started with Carlos Cuesta, and many of the people who represent Arsenal within the coaching staff and the players. You see a very united front from them. It really does mean something to them. The relationships, the journey. Sure, we'd all love if we've lifted trophies by now, and that can make decisions easier, such as departures, right? And I remember when Edu left late last year, there was a sense, a reaction. Even me, I was pondering, like, you know, why would you leave now? Because like, we're on the cusp of greatness, of capping off this era, this iteration, which so many people behind the scenes have all contributed to it and been a part of, but we haven't quite capped it off yet, have we? So look, Carlos Cuesta's message, I think it was beautiful. If you haven't read it again, I think it's been shared as well by the Arsenal official accounts on social media and whatnot. So you can see how much it meant to him, how much the players and the relationships mean to him, how much Mikel Arteta meant to him. And look, to get a promotion like that at 29 years of age. That's mind-blowing. 29. So many players are still playing. Like, the likelihood is that he's going to have players that he's coaching and instructing who are older than him, right? Who have been around the block for a lot longer in football. And look, it's an outstanding achievement for him. Wishing him all the best. And it leaves a gap within Mikel Arteta's coaching group. So it's interesting to see who comes in. I know there's that romantic element with bringing back Santi Cazorla. I just don't know that that's going to happen. He's still playing at his age, and he looks fantastic as well, by the way, at the ripe young age of 40-odd. I don't believe he's actually had much coaching experience. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I don't believe he's done his badges as yet or anything. So unlike someone like Jorginho, who you know, he's a coach in waiting in the next few years. That will be a very natural step for him. So remains to be seen who fills that void and what happens. But I'm sure behind the scenes, the club probably had some awareness of this, that this was on the horizon. So it remains to be seen. So best of luck to Carlos Cuesta. Okay, so the next topic I wanted to talk about was Nico Williams, and my apologies, it was remiss of me. I forgot to mention him in my recording a few days ago because I did have my running notes that I was working through in no particular order, but somehow I just overlooked that. So my apologies. A few days ago, look, I'm sure it's old news by now, right? You're probably aware of it just as I am, that Ornstein tweeted that, and the wording is very insightful here, that Arsenal and Chelsea have cooled their interest in him. So just reading between the lines, you know, language is important. Language is insightful. I think what that suggests is that he's been told that Arsenal, all other clubs have been told that he's basically not leaving Spain, that he doesn't have much desire to. I think many Spanish players have their eyes on the big clubs, the big boys in town, Barca and Real Madrid. And look, it's fair enough. It's fair enough. You can forge an absolutely outstanding domestic and international career just by remaining in the one country. So I understand. I totally understand that. Look, it's time to move on. This is me not being revisionist, so to speak, but even when the links were ongoing for the last 12 months and so, when I'd seen him play at the Euros, of course, it looks fantastic. Like, it looks brilliant. You have to question how easy it is to transition from across the continent into the Premier League. And I think Arsenal are very, very much aware of that. You've seen it reflected in the transactions we've made over several years now. We seem to have a preference to purchase from within the Premier League, in a proven track record in England, proven Premier League players. And of course, there's a hell of a premium to pay that comes with that, that the price tags are significantly higher. But I think Arsenal have been prepared to do that because we have a much greater sense of confidence of what we're going to see when that player puts on an Arsenal shirt. And I've already mentioned Pepe as well. And this is not to pile on Pepe, not at all. It was the wrong transaction at the wrong time. I mean, Emery didn't even want him. Emery wanted Zaha. So speaking of Premier League proven at the time, like that's who Emery wanted. And how disjointed and fractured the club was looking after their own interests of the individuals involved, that they signed Pepe and put him in Emery's hands to say, here you go, make the best of this. He didn't want him. He wanted a right-footed player to come off the left, and that was Zaha, and he got the exact opposite. So the point I'm trying to make is that Arsenal have learned over a period of time now that there's a huge question mark to be assessed in paying these very significant transfer fees and release clauses and wages that come with signings of that standing. Are we going to see that reflected in England? And just on Nico Williams, with all due respect to him, even his output, like when you look at his numbers, I believe it was four, perhaps five La Liga goals. Please, again, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm just going off what I recall at the time. Does that constitute that level of spending? I don't know. I questioned that to every time we were linked with him. I was just thinking, I'm not so sure about this. I'm not so sure. Should Arsenal now, should we pull the trigger on that type of spending? And what we need to understand is that our resources are finite, that there are downstream effects and consequences to our decisions. If we get something wrong at this stage of our progress, if you get something wrong, it's not like we're just going to sign another option in January or next summer. No, we are committed to seeing that player through for the duration of their contract. So you have to get it right. When we're so close to climbing that mountain is the analogy I keep using. You have to get these decisions right. And I can totally understand that we've got enough doubt over that transaction to move on to other targets, which brings me back to the other point I raised the other day, is that do we look within the Premier League again? Do we look at someone like Semenyo? Ollie Watkins, as much as, you know, it's not the glamorous, you know, big marquee centre forward signing that we're perhaps all, many of us are hoping for, he's Premier League proven, like, you know what you're getting. And there are ramifications to every action or inaction Arsenal take, because we have a hell of a lot to do this summer, which I touched on again the other day, so I won't go through all of that again. But, you know, we've put ourselves in a position where there's so much business to attend to. We were off the boil in January and last summer, right? So ideally, we could have spaced out this refresh and renew within certain areas of the squad. You could space that out over a couple of successive windows. Now, Arsenal, unfortunately, we didn't do it, and we don't need to go through all that again. Everyone's aware of what I'm referring to. We find ourselves in a position now where we've got a compressed period of time now, this summer transfer window, with a lot of business to do, starting from all the way through the squad, literally from goalkeeper to defence to midfield to forwards. So two forwards, ideally, we are going for. So there's a lot to do now, and the there's correlation between these transactions. So, for example, I touched on the other day that signing Kepa for £5 million. It's such an economical, just an excellent rationale to do it. Because we then release release funds to be utilized elsewhere in the squad. We keep that capacity because we are certainly going to need a lot more spending in other areas of the pitch. Which brings me to my next point regarding Thomas Partey. So in recent days, it seems that various reports have intimated or suggested that Arsenal and Partey are at an impasse with regards to the current offer that's been tabled for him and his representatives. It seems like the sticking point is salary and quite likely term as well. I'd imagine he'd be wanting security at this point of his career. You know, players reach a certain age where they want that last really big, sizable contract and the wages and the term to go with it. He's possibly looking for 2, maybe 3 years at a wage increase, which is fair enough. That's what they're entitled to ask for, what they deem they're worthy of. From Arsenal's point of view, I totally understand as well. Right, we benefited from his fitness. That's the word I was trying to say. We benefited from his fitness in the most recent season. However, you have to say, over the 5 years that he's been at the club, we've also really suffered by his ongoing issues. There's a host of like soft tissue injuries, thigh, I believe hamstring as well. And so often at crucial times of the year where we really needed him, and he's been absent for sometimes six weeks, 8 weeks, 2 months at a time, right? And that's really cost Arsenal. And look, you know, sure, you can say we didn't have the adequate squad depth as well to cater for his invariable absences. But also from Arsenal's point of view, we have to say, look, one recent season, you know, we shouldn't be too hasty to assume that that this fitness will maintain. So from Arsenal's point of view as well, I can understand it. Now there's another rationale looking as well, and it ties into what I've been saying all through this all through my recent recordings, is that Arsenal have so much to do this summer, that can we afford to lose Partey and Jorginho and only sign Zubimendi in midfield? And I can imagine that could make a few nervous. Like, just looking at the numbers like that, it makes me nervous. Like, is that sufficient, or should we go? I think we'd have to actually go and sign another midfielder this season. And once again, It comes back down to budget, resources, and price point, because Arsenal are not looking for just any midfielder to come in and just, you know, fill up a place in the squad. We probably have that already, right? We could repurpose someone like Lewis Skelly or something if we wanted to utilize what we have in the squad. Perhaps Mikel Merino can be repurposed as a six. I don't know. We haven't quite seen enough of Mikel Merino as a true midfielder to really assess where his best, most natural position lies in the Arsenal squad. So Arsenal will need to go out and spend. And if you're wanting someone at the caliber that we are looking for, remembering that this is not project rebuilding, this is not trying to lift us from eighth to a European place or the Champions League. We are trying to climb the summit now. We are trying to win the Premier League, trying to win the Champions League. So to get someone of that caliber, it's not going to come cheap. And do Arsenal have the resources to do all of this? Two forwards, two midfielders, including Zubimendi, a defender, goalkeeper, Kepa. So do we have the resources for all of that? And perhaps internally in the club, the view is just renew him, just get another 12 months out of him, and next summer we can look to refresh and reinvest in midfield. So maybe that's part of the logic, that's part of the rationale. I can understand it if so. However, if we were to lose him and Jorginho at once, it's a real question mark, isn't it? Ideally, I would have loved to have kept Jorginho for another 12 months. I think he's about as good as a third choice if you want to. That I don't mean that with no disrespect, but like a third choice number six in your squad. I mean, can you name me any better ones? Like, I'm struggling right now to think of ones. So that would have been preferred, but it is what it is. This is just part and parcel of the nature of football and the cycles that we operate within. So it's seeming that the impasse would suggest that party would look to move on and obtain that other big contract elsewhere. So look, it is what it is. There's a lot of off-field noise around him as well, which has always made me uncomfortable. I've only spent this segment talking about party on the pitch as a footballer. The off-the-field stuff as well. Look, I just think it's time. Sometimes I just think it's a natural time where players and the clubs move in different directions, and perhaps this is a good time for Arsenal to do that as well. So it remains to be seen on that one. I'm waiting for like one of the big big account. In fact, was there a suggestion? Was there a tweet by I saw a screenshot of Fabrizio Romano earlier, which I don't think it was conclusive, but it just said that there's something to do with what I just referenced, that it's quite possible that he will move on in the coming days. So let's wait and see. I do believe there's that pre-season training camp that squad and Arteta does in Spain. Then that usually starts a few weeks, like, you know, players one by one sort of trickle back in from their holidays to join that group. And then, of course, there's the official preseason tour. They're flying to Singapore and Hong Kong. I think it's that's the third week of July. I might be wrong. So you certainly want as many of your new signings and new players on board on that plane come preseason. And that's something Arsenal have been doing really well in recent years. Like, we've been better able to get our business done early, or as much of our summer business done early, so we can integrate players. We can have them within the squad. We can have them training together, playing matches together, preseason together, bonding on tours and whatnot. It is so, so important. It's a huge intangible, and more so important this season because the fixture list is it's a brutal opening. It really is. I looked at that, and immediately what sprung to mind is in the first six Premier League matches, if you were to name the hardest away grounds that we go to, if you would just ask me before the fixtures were released, I would probably say that St James's Park has become really difficult in recent years. I mean, they're always there's a Newcastle Arsenal rivalry of late, right? They always seem to just, you know, sharpen their knives when we come out, and they save something special. The crowd too, for Arsenal when Arsenal are in town. Old Trafford, despite how poor United are, what continues to frustrate me is that they somehow still scrape out results against Arsenal. And it just annoys me because I remember I've followed Arsenal since 1995, right? So United and Arsenal for the first, you know, for the first 10, 15 years of my Arsenal support in life, it dominated the headlines. It's such a rivalry, you know, steeped in history, and we just still, despite how so many teams go there and just beat them up and make a mockery of them, we still struggle to, right? So we go in there on opening day, and I'm just hopeful that we slap them around a little bit, right? Because they certainly have one coming. After, you know, they knocked us out of the FA Cup at the Emirates early this season, you know, in a fixture that had significant consequences for Arsenal. So, look, there's that. And then the other main away ground that I think we really struggle at lately is at Anfield. Haven't won there since that Derby Masterclass in 2012, 2013 from memory. Even though in recent years we've kept them out, we've been able to come away with a point, which on paper, you know, I think that's always an excellent result. Going to Anfield against Liverpool in recent years, they're an excellent team and have been for many, many years now. It's time we go there and win. So we've got those three matches in the opening six. Our first home match is against Leeds, which I certainly hope we should have enough for them. But this all ties back to the importance of having our business attended to and done as quickly as possible. So we have players fit. We have a squad to call upon, that we have players ready to step in and the levels don't drop. We have rotational options because the cascade effect of our injuries and then how much it overloads and overburdens other players in the squad. I mean, we've seen that, right? We saw it a few seasons back when Yuriin Timber, unfortunately, did his ACL on opening day, and you saw what the ramifications were to Ben White, who performed at an excellent level across that season. But things catch up, right? We're all human beings. Things invariably catch up with you, and I don't believe Ben White would have had the injury struggles and the procedure and the surgery he needed last season. I don't think he would have had that had Timber been fit the prior season and the two of them could have shared a lot more minutes together. And conversely, going into this season, speaking of Timber, I saw some quotes from him in recent days. It's a very insightful interview, so please go on and read it properly, because I'm just paraphrasing here. I don't want to botch anything. But the essence is that Timber knew, and the club knew, and Arteta knew some months back, that he's going to need a procedure. He's going to need ankle surgery. There was a hell of a lot of pain and inflammation he was playing through. Pretty much what got him through was his desire and the adrenaline to keep playing. I mean, players don't want to miss Champions League matches against Real Madrid and PSG semi-finals. They don't want to miss that. So he wasn't training. Like, he was just basically managing the pain between match days. And he was really, really struggling. And had Arsenal not made it to the semi-finals, he probably would have. They probably would have just taken him off the team, and just, you know, he could have had that procedure and started his recovery process. But we didn't have the choice because Ben White wasn't fit or available to step back in. So the reason I'm going on this long tangent is that the two are correlated, the two tie together. Once you start to overburden or over rely upon one area of the squad, it may not happen for a week or a month or 6 months or a season, but it catches up with the other. So we need as many fit players as possible as we can, because we're going to need to call upon them. There's so much football, and you saw in January how just one by one the weight of the schedule it impacted so many players. I mean, Kai Havertz wouldn't have done his hamstring, torn it off the bone, and been out for 4 or 5 months had he had more rest time throughout January. Had we not had the injuries elsewhere across the squad, Jesus and ACL, Saka in late December, hamstring torn off the bone, required surgery. So we need players fit, healthy, available, and ready to step in and rotate with each other, and whilst not dropping the levels. And this is an understandable question mark that Arteta has, that just sort of continues to linger over him. Like, does he fully trust, and is he fully ready to lean into his squad to rotate and manage workloads accordingly. Like, we haven't really seen it sustained as yet, and I'm hoping that now that with some correct decisions made in the transfer market, the correct players to come in and strengthen areas of the squad, that we will start to see that more, because we are certainly going to need to call upon our squad to do what it is that we all are hoping that we do. And I think it's stating the obvious here, right? But we want to win the Premier League. We want to win the Champions League. I think we're a fantastic chance for either this season. Can we do both or gun for four competitions at once? I don't know. I don't think we can with the current squad numbers of the makeup as it is, especially if we don't strengthen across the board. I don't want to be undercooked again going into a season when we still look at the numbers and think that we're one forward short, or we're one midfielder short, or we're one defender short. I just don't think we can do that. So all the noises we're hearing from the club, though, are very, very positive. There's nothing to suggest that we're not going to come pre-season, come that plane when they depart to Singapore and Hong Kong. There's nothing to suggest that we won't have our business done and attended to in those new signings on that plane. So, yeah, so it's just going to be a busy time in the next couple of weeks. So let's wait and see what comes forward and what is announced. Until then, once again, I thank you all for listening and tuning in. If you could be so kind, please, if you're listening on a podcast platform, a rating very much is appreciated. It helps boost my visibility, please, on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or like and subscribe on YouTube. That will be most appreciated. Thank you. I appreciate all the comments and suggestions and feedback. So please keep that coming in. I'm going to try and record more regularly from here on in. So please, if you have a question that you would like to submit, you can do it anonymously if you like, or if you don't want me to read out your name, that's absolutely fine. So please send on any questions through. I will cover them all in the next recording. But until then, look after yourselves. Be kind to one another. There's so much going on in the world right now. It's difficult, right? It's difficult. So wherever you are, I hope you're well and you're safe. Look after your loved ones. Look after yourself, and just be kind to each other. And that's just we can all just do our best. So thank you again for listening. I'm going to sign off for now. Take care and come on, Arsenal.